This is an AV Nation special. My name is Tom Albright. I am your host. Today we're going to be talking about command and control, and with us, a young lady I've known for a lot of years and a gentleman I got to know over the last couple of years. First and foremost, Angela Nolan. Welcome, ma'am.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I got to hang out with Angela here not too recently at the PSNI event, so that was cool. Also with us is Paris Orson. Welcome, Paris.
Hello, everyone.
So a little bit of background, a little bit of definition. CTI, company, the main corporation for AV Nation, they acquired Vistacom back in January. And Angela was the CEO of Vistacom, and Paris was the engineering manager for Vistacom. They have both joined CTI as part of that. Now Angela is the VP of systems integration. Paris, the branch manager for Allentown, which is the city that they're both out of. One thing that Vistacom has done really, really well had been over the years, and that's command and control. So we thought we'd take a moment here and really kind of define the section, the sector of command and control, and get to know a little bit more about that for you, quite frankly. The one thing, Paris, we'll start with you on this, or Angela, we'll start with you on this. If somebody's looking at the title of this podcast, right, or they see command and control when they go to Infocom, right, as a category, define for me what you would say is that category of command and control.
Sure, and that is a really good question because it means different things to different people. So I think it is really important to kind of set the stage for what we're talking about and what definition we're using here. A lot of people say that their definition for a control center is a large room with an overview video wall with a bank of operators at different consoles in that room in a mission critical environment. And that is true. However, there's some more intricacies involved there. For instance, the epicenter of that control room is the operators need to receive information, they need to analyze it, they need to collaborate to perform a critical action, and then they need to communicate those critical decisions and push that out for an emerging or critical event or an operational condition. So all of that has to be done as quickly and efficiently as possible in real time to be able to make mission critical decisions.
Paris, AV Week, AV Nation, we cover the AV industry. Command and control is a section, though, of that industry. Talk for a second about the audio and the video components that drive a command and control system.
It's all AV, right? So we have video walls, and that can go all the way back to LCDs to now direct view LEDs, and then projector-based cube walls and so forth. And each of those were driven from the angle of, how do we get a big image up on a screen? Well, within the command and control environment, it's more than one image. It's multiple images. It's multiple sources. And you look at that from an angle of, like, how do I get those multiple images up there, and what quality are those images, and how can I have actionable information on that? Well, that's just a regular video wall, but with a processor in front of it. So from a video prerogative, a lot of it revolves around that content that's up on the wall, but where the real work happens is at each of the consoles. And then from the audio portion, which is a much smaller portion within the control room, it is some information about data that you might have on that wall. You might have a local news station or a weather report, and you want to hear that information if there's a major event or a big storm coming in and so forth. But then there's other environments where it's very quiet because they actually aren't looking at that kind of information. They're looking at maps or SCADAs and different things that don't necessarily revolve around knowing the audio cues of the situation. So there is typical transmission for video and audio in these spaces, but generally it focuses a lot around the video wall and then how we transmit that data back and forth, which doesn't always line up completely with normal AV, but it's starting to go there because, as we all have been talking about, AV over IP is a big portion of this, and command and control started with a lot more video over IP, and now it's almost all video over IP for the most part.
Oh, very cool. Angela, talk for a second about the operators, right? The folks that are running these network operation centers, these security rooms, and some of the demands that they make on quite frankly, the folks that are designing it and putting it in, and some of their unique needs when you guys go in and start talking to them.
Sure. And to kind of give you a little more information on that, it's really critical that those operators, that the technology strategy enhances their ability to do their job instead of, you know, making it more complex and more complicated. The operators work in two different environments in a control center, right? They have their local environment that they work day to day, and for the most part on that personal video wall in front of them. And that's where they're constantly analyzing and reviewing whatever data sources that are coming in, whether it's physical security, IT security, utility security. All of their sources are usually, they're operating at that personal video wall level. The overview video wall for the operators is to be able to have a common operational picture when they need to collaborate or escalate to make decisions across multiple people. So the operator needs to be able to have the ability to quickly switch between sources at their local video wall to be able to make decisions, and then very quickly escalate and enhance to an overview video wall to be able to make escalated decisions amongst a group of people.
So really quickly, just so I have it in my head, when you say overview video wall versus personal video wall, kind of define that for me. And if I'm envisioning this right, right, you've got a big wall somewhere in the facility, and then you've got monitors, you know, kind of at each station.
That's really kind of basically the answer. So, you know, each operator in a fully outfitted command and control center is going to have a console with anywhere from one to usually, you know, four or five personal monitors that their data is being displayed on a regular basis. And they may have multiple PCs as well, because from an IT standpoint, they have to things that have data that's air gapped between networks, right? So they may be also going between different platforms within that video wall on their personal desk. And then the overview video wall is just that, a very large video wall at the front of the room that everybody can see and analyze data on.
Paris, when you start, you know, designing, how do you take the operator's point of view, right? In this case, this is the end user. This is the person actually using these systems. How do you design from their perspective and from their point of view, to Angela's point, to make their jobs easier, not harder with the technology?
Well, you know, it's funny you ask that, because I do, this is almost a personal thing for me. I really do believe that the end user is the person that benefits the most from any portion of AV, and that's across the board. But in this particular case, this is an individual that sits at a console with multiple displays in front of them, and they need to sit there and analyze data for many hours on end. And in certain situations, it might be a mission critical or something along those lines. And that there might be an incident that happens. And within that incident, that person may be basically shackled to that desk for several hours past their normal shift. So it is incredibly important that we look at it holistically, from the console being ergonomically workable, maybe having a sit-stand capability. They're sitting, so the chair that they actually physically sit in needs to be appropriate for long sitting, you know, spans, and be able to support the operator so that they can comfortably be there and be analyzing that data and trying to make the best decisions possible for the situation at hand. And then making sure that the technology itself actually is giving them enough of the data, or all of the data, or whatever they need, which is usually multiple sources, in front of them, so they can make, again, quick decisions based upon information that is viable and good for the situation at hand, to rectify the situation at hand, or at least inform others about the situation at hand. So it all plays a part in how they can be in that location for a long period of time, make good decisions. And if you're tired, if you don't feel comfortable in your location, you're not going to make good decisions. And it's really about decision making, because a lot of times when these situations come up, they need to make very fast decisions. And if their working environment is not comfortable and they're not comfortable in it, they are not going to make good decisions. So it's absolutely vital that we think about the ergonomics and the comfort of the operators sitting at their actual workstations before you think about the rest of the technology to some extent, even though the rest of the technology is very important as well.
One of the statistics in the control room environment, well, the first time I heard it, I was really surprised. Their retention of operators within the control room space is about 2 years. So they really have a challenge with recruitment and retaining operators in that control room environment. It's high stress, and it's really a difficult job for them to do. So it's our job to make it a little bit easier for them and to kind of take some of that stress out of their day-to-day work. And, you know, along with the things that Paris said, you know, lighting and air handling are also two critical issues that they're looking at right now. The workflow, the foot traffic, the ergonomics, the ease of the technology, all of it plays into a control room that the operators are comfortable working in and comfortable making decisions in.
So here's a side question, and the more I learn about this, the more I know I find out what I don't know. Typical conference room, right? Let's pick on conference rooms for a second. You've got microphones, you've got a display of some sort, you know, and you that's, you know, not saying that's it, but that's pretty much it. Paris, what you're talking about is marrying what in the typical corporate boardroom conference room space would be interior design, furnishings, right? You guys are responsible, and you're talking about and you're designing everything that these users are touching.
You're spot on. I mean, interior design might be a little bit of a stretch, especially for me personally.
Okay, but so you don't pick the fabric of the chair, but you pick the chair, right?
Yeah, no, we absolutely are. Not just that, the console itself. The console has design criteria, right? The surfaces and the type of materials used for that console do play into this. And to Angela's point, that lighting structure is actually important too. Like, so how you provide lighting for the work surface that each of these individuals works on, some of them may actually have physical things in front of them that they need to have beyond the array of monitors that they're looking at, right? So you need to balance those two things. You need a darker environment generally because you want to have a lot of emphasis on not straining the AIs. Even the video wall is not necessarily as bright as we might have it in a conference room or something along those lines.
Yeah.
That said, though, you want it to feel comfortable, and that work environment, that desktop needs to be lit up appropriately for if they need physical data to read or anything like that as well.
All right. So let's talk about some of the Paris, you mentioned, you know, the command and control almost started with in AV over IP, right? And certainly we have seen that category grow, let's say, the last 15 years-ish. What are some other, you know, improvements in AV technology that you guys are seeing in this space?
It's interesting because there's a lot of people think that we've moved to direct view LED pretty exclusively, and that really isn't the case because the pixel density within that is not what you would think for certain applications. If you're looking at video data, for example, a bunch of cameras on the internet, that quality level is lower. You're gonna be kind of challenged with a number of those sources that you have on that wall, and that's going to play into this factor as well. But that video data is much more forgiving on a lower pixel density than, say, a computer showing you information that's about storms coming in or something along those lines. That data is going to be need to be much more detailed and easy to digest from a distance. And you're going to want to see that detail. So the pixel density is going to go up. Direct view LED doesn't necessarily play into that quite yet. We're getting there, but we're not quite there. So that's a good example of where technology hasn't quite shifted towards where we need to be for the control room environment. But on the inverse of that, where we are doing a lot of very complicated thing with a lot of different computer sources. We might have a system where we have 20, 30, 40 computers that are actually just being encoded and brought into the network and then displayed on the video wall and also brought to the operators. One of the big things that we're really seeing a lot of motion in is with KVMing. Being able to use KVMing in a way that's fluid and simple for the operators to switch between desktops, understand which desktop they're operating. I mean, I'm sure many people that have, if you've dived into any control room stuff, you've seen that picture of the guy that has his console and he's got like five keyboards and mice and all the monitors, and it's like, it looks like it's a lot, right? Well, we're finally getting away from all that, where I really can have all those computers accessible with a single keyboard and mouse pretty easily, and I can really give them the ability to know where they're at. There's certain ones that are showing different frames around which display you're activating and so forth, and that's really where I'm starting to see a lot of motion, where we get a lot more fluidity from the operator and how they can look at their information and how they can manipulate that information and then share that with others, obviously, on the bigger video wall.
And really quickly, Barris, I have a rule. You don't bring up an acronym unless you define it. So what is KVMing?
Keyboard, video, and mice. So that's the ability to bring it all together.
Angela, when you're looking at this, right, talk for a second about, you know, some of the challenges that you guys face when you're brought in on a project, right, or as you're finishing it, you know, what are some of the challenges that you guys run into when you start rolling up some of these knocks, some of these, you know, emergency, these security systems? Not just, you know, from a technology standpoint, but you know, getting the users trained, quite frankly, and getting them used to this new system.
There's some common challenges that we run into. Unfortunately, on a lot of the control rooms that we do, the operators are not brought in early on the design process. And therefore, you know, there's kind of two problems with that. It's a longer training curve to get them up to speed on the new workflow and the technology that they're going to be using. But also there could be decisions made that may not be in their best interest if they're not brought in early to really understand, you know, their workflow. Because the tools we have now really can do a lot. And it's not necessarily more costly for some of the things they want, but they really should be addressed early and upfront. Along the same lines, we're seeing the IT teams also need to be part of the early deployment of these control centers. Typically, there's a heightened IT security element in a mission control environment. They may have NERC SIP requirements. They may have some other, you know, SOC 2 requirements, some other things specific to their industry that have heightened IT security protocols. Again, and that also facilitates the need for a KVM, right? Separate networks, separate keyboards for different types of IT processors and desktops that they're using. So we also need to make sure that they're brought in early. That can be a real issue if they're brought in late. It really can slow down and also sometimes put a complete halt to a project if the infrastructure needs to be completely changed to support their technology investment.
100% agree. IT needs to be brought in early. Everything from being able to separate those networks, make sure that we have the sources from each of those networks, bringing those in. There's also applications where you might have items, sources, cameras, whatever it happens to be outside the network, and we need to bring those through their firewall to get them onto the network so they can display them on their video wall or on the local operator's console and displays. And that conversation, the later that happens in this going through the design process, the more chance there's going to be issues. I cannot tell you how many times that the later that is, the more obvious it is there's going to be a problem, because someone's not going to know what was needed, and then it's going to be, well, we can't do that, or we didn't accommodate for that. So I can tell you right now, if there's anybody that's in IT out there listening to this, or if you're an end user, bring your IT staff in early. It's going to benefit you 100% of the time.
All right. Angela, and actually Angela, and then Paris, I want to kind of walk me through the design process, right? Somebody gets a hold of you, Angela, and like, you know, look, I think I need this, right? I think I need, you know, a command and control center, right? Whether it's that's a NOC or it's a security system or whatever, 911 dispatch. What's that process look like? Like when you start talking to folks, what are some of the things that you're trying to find out? What are some of the pain points you're trying to identify?
So the first thing, you know, we want to make sure that you have a full team on board for the full deployment, right? There needs to be someone like CTI on board, understanding the technology investment, the furniture investment. You need to have, you know, someone from IT as well being part of that team. So first you want to assemble the right team for that environment. Once we have that in place, we typically like to go through understanding and in depth the typical current workflow of the operators in that space.
Okay.
And then we like to go over the challenges that those current operators are having in that environment. You know, what challenges are they having that we can help them overcome to work quicker, faster, to make better decisions in that environment. Obviously, if there's multiple disciplines within that environment, right? So one of the common challenges that happens are you could have, for instance, a command center that's doing security monitoring and IT monitoring. Those are two very different workflows in the same environment. So you need to be able to create a solution that's going to work for both disciplines. So you really need to understand and be somewhat of an expert in the different types of disciplines that are going to work in that space. Once you understand their challenges and their current workflow, you need to also understand the limitations of the space. You need to discuss network infrastructure, budgets, all of those things go into it.
It's funny because when I've been brought into design conversations, by the time I'm brought in, generally there is a guy there that knows something about what he wants in the space, right?
Yeah.
And they always gravitate towards the wall. They always want to talk about the wall and how much pixel density they're going to have, or how it's going to have a curve. It's going to be big. It's going to be beautiful. Okay, that's great. And it's part of the reason I started talking a lot about the actual person sitting behind the console, because I do believe that they get a little lost in that original conversation. But we have, you know, we need to get the right processing in there. We got to make sure the right network is in place. We have to make sure that we have the right things to put it all together as a whole. And I think that's one thing that gets a little bit lost on some people. They focus on one portion of the technology. Oh, we need to have these things in the processing, and we need to have this kind of video wall. And then it's like, oh, well, yeah, we needed consoles too. Let's just, you know, we can just throw a few of them in. And, you know, it becomes like it's a second thought. And I think that that's where people go awry. If they're not thinking of the whole space, all the way to, like, you may have ancillary conference rooms that need to be able to receive the feeds from the system. So, you know, a war room of or such, right? So there might be managers that want to get information from these systems. So you need to really kind of think about it more holistically. And I think that's one thing that I think it's one thing we've done really well over the years, and why we've been successful, is that we go in thinking of the whole space and how it will all go together. And that's partially because of our ties with AV, but it's also with all the effort we've put in meeting with people over the years, and really realize that it's not just one factor across all of these things. It's the whole thing that needs to be discussed. For, you know, one thing to take into consideration, it could end up that your whole facility is one giant system. And that is not the same as having 10 different individual rooms that all do different things.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that gets lost on a lot of people.
So, Angela, I've used NOC as a generic term in our conversation.
You did the acronym.
I don't even know that acronym. A Network Operations Center. I pulled that out of nowhere. Is it center or? Yeah, it's center, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yep.
There are obviously other uses of this, right? 911 centers, campus security. I learned the other day it's also used in patient monitoring, right, in hospitals. So for a few minutes here, talk about those different use cases and maybe what's different in each of those, even though they all might call themselves command and control systems.
Yeah, there's a million acronyms in this industry. I'll start with an easy one. A TOC is a traffic operations center, right? So that's somebody like train management or public transportation management. So in that environment, they're monitoring large amounts of video cameras, outside video cameras in the traffic environment, trying to analyze where there's a problem with the traffic, what they might need to do to reroute things. They could also be looking at weather. So in that environment, the sources are typically just hundreds and hundreds of video cameras. In a utility command center, typically the data that they're viewing is maps and SCADA. SCADA are the utility maps of the layout of all of the power grid and the power
infrastructure. Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's very detailed, very finite, very different needs for the video wall to be able to see that SCADA mapping clearly versus a traffic camera. Patient monitoring, again, very different use. You're potentially monitoring patients with fall risk or monitoring for intensive care to bring in remote doctors. So in that environment, you need very high resolution cameras to be able to see very specific things happening with that patient. Another environment would be 911 centers. So they're monitoring 911 calls. They could also be looking at weather emergencies. So they, in that environment, they may have a whole lot of different sources that they're looking at and need to be able to make very quick decisions. Network operations center, they're monitoring the network, their network traffic, security. Security operations centers are monitoring physical security, which is security cameras, things like that. But then they're also monitoring IT security and things like that. So that could be, IT security data tools that they're using and analyzing. So just a myriad of different ways that you can use a control center. It's kind of mind-boggling when you think of all the different scenarios that are mission critical.
Well, and I don't know. I remember when you and I were talking, but you said at one point to me that some facilities might have several command and control centers depending on their use case. That way they don't have to have them all in one room.
Yeah, and what's interesting is pre-COVID, we were seeing a trend towards centralizing these large command centers, right? Having everybody in the same facility, different disciplines within the same environment, large facilities. And then COVID happens, and they realized that having smaller decentralized command centers might be a better solution for safety and security, as well as the ability for an operator to remotely be able to have those same tools, because maybe they have to be at home making those decisions and have the same tools available to them.
Paris, as we kind of wrap up here, describe to me a successful command and control deployment.
I mean, with any AV system, what I consider success is users that can get the most out, if not become more efficient at what they normally do every day, by utilizing the technology. And I think that's not lost in a control room. We are an addition to, we are not the focus of any individual's workflow or what they do on a day-to-day. So we are trying to enhance everything that they can do and what they have access to and the information they can view, react to and so forth. And I think that what really nails a positive installation is that we have operators that are actually comfortable and functionally doing what they need to do in the most efficient way they possibly can. And if there is any kind of situation that comes up and they need to react to that situation, that it can easily be brought up to the masses and people can be looking at that and making decisions upon that information. And it's actual information that is, it's not lost. It's not secondary. It's actual and in time and happening in a way where they can make the positive decisions and we can have positive outcomes. And that is, to me, what it's all about for a control room, which is a little bit different than your traditional AV. Same things for the most part, but the end is a little bit different because you really have, sometimes you have life and death situations. Sometimes you have, even the network going down for a portion of the country or something like that could be a major problem for many people and cause major problems. So,
yeah, it's one of those instances where the technology really is critical.
Yeah.
Because of the information being shared.
One other thing to add to that is it is also critical that it's 24/7, 365 uptime.
Yeah.
There is no allowance in these environments for, oh, the system's down today. Because you never know when that emergency might happen.
All right. Thank you guys so much. A couple of things that I picked up here. We say command and control, but there is a lot of AV in there. As well as IT technology, getting those IT folks in early and listening to your operators, right? Get those folks in early and listen to their workflow. Paris Orison, thank you, sir. How do people connect with you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. You can also obviously reach out to CTI if you're in the Allentown area, and you might be able to find me here at the office.
Very good. Ms. Nolan, always good to have you, ma'am. How do people connect with you or find out more about the command and control systems?
Sure. As always, they can reach me on LinkedIn. They can also learn more about the control room solutions that CTI provides on CTI's website, which is www.cti.com/solutions/control-rooms.
Very good. Thank you both so much. For me, for Tim Albright, go by the website, aviation.tv. That's aviation.tv. You'll find programs like this and a host of others. All that and more at aviation.tv. That's aviation.tv.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This
This
is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.